Tjing, Micke här. I den här bubblaren så har vi en liten specialare, så att jag kommer byta över till engelska och så ska vi intervjua Johanny. Warm welcome to Mindy, Johanny.
Thank you, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You are, what did you say, a cultural reporter in Finland?
Yeah, I do my, I'm a radio journalist. I have my own show, or actually there's some other people doing it as well. It's like a weekly program about current issues in culture, basically.
But you are also part of a very special product that warms to my heart because I'm a tabletop role player. But before we delve more into that, we want to know more about you. So, okay. Who is Johanny?
Johanny is a bit more than 40 years old geek who loves all kinds of games. And I've reintroduced myself to tabletop role playing in 2010. In the 90s, I was playing like mostly cyberpunk with my friends, like during the upper elementary school and high school. But then there was almost 20 years gap that I didn't play any tabletop role-playing games. And then came the Dungeons and Dragons, the fifth edition, and my old friends who were living here in Helsinki asked me if I wanted to join. And then we started to play tabletop role-playing games. But I consider myself I'm a journalist, like you said already, as a profession. But I'm also a punk rocker. I've been playing in hardcore punk bands for 25 years, drums mostly, and been touring around the world with a DIY band, punk bands. So that's very much a big part of what I've consider myself as I identify to. And actually I just happen to have a refused shirt on me that played a big part when I was living up north in Finland, close to the Swedish border. We went to see all these bands back in the day in the late 90s. So
yeah,
there you have it.
Yeah. Do you play board games?
Actually, yeah, I've just started to play this Finnish pretty cool, huge game called Agemonia. I don't know how you pronounce it in Finnish. We pronounce it Agemonia, but I guess it's a fantasy role playing like a board game. And I have Arkham Horror. I have on my, I don't have that. My geek corner is on the other wall there. I don't have this. It's very impressive what you have in the background, but my geek corner is there. But there is bunch of board games as well, but yep. Mainly tabletop role playing games is more of my thing. I have friends who are doing it as well. So as you know, you need the community around you to get the most out of it. So
what's your favorite board game then?
My favorite board game, well, I would say Arkham Horror is pretty damn good, and I've tried Nemesis, which was also awesome, this alien game. But like I said, I would recommend everyone to try this new Agemonia game. It's written by pretty known Finnish like LARP and tabletop role playing game designer Mike Pohjola. Mm. So and the same guy who is behind our project Ropelive as the artist is this comic artist called Petri Hiltunen, which has done a lot of illustration for different fantasy games as well. So he's behind of that. I have the game in at my work at the moment, because there's a bunch of people who we've been playing at my work in Yle but the box is huge, and I think it weighs almost 15 kilos.
The
whole box. Yeah. And there's, yeah, I think there's 1,400 pieces, I think, different, like, so it's pretty impressive in that sense as well.
Do you have a favorite mechanics in board games?
Well, I'm, well, not really. I'm not that deep into that, the about the mechanics stuff. I would prefer, I mean, I could talk about tabletop role playing mechanics, but board games, I concentrate more on the story and the atmosphere and stuff like that, but I'm not really expert on different mechanics on the games.
But you as you said, you do play tabletop RPGs.
Yes.
But what's your favorite mechanic in tabletop RPGs then?
Well, of course, I like the fifth edition of Dungeons and Dragons back in the day, and now that we have a Finnish version of that game, it's called Legendoja and Lohikäärmeitä. I can show you. I have it right here. I've been playing it as a dungeon master right here.
Super cool.
Yeah, this is not the translated. It's actually it's its own game, but it uses the fifth edition of Dungeons and Dragons, and it has translated like a lot of the vocabulary into Finnish the first time. So I don't have to talk like half of the time. I don't have to talk in English, hit points or experience points or throw 1d6 or whatever, you know, there's everything is in Finnish. So that's pretty cool, but it's the fifth edition. But I think this, we started to play this Dungeon World game a couple of years ago. And that is based on two like die, like normal 1d6 die, basically. Yeah. It's very, very, very simple. And I think that's one of the reasons that we started to use it in my role-playing program as well, because everybody knows the normal die or the dice. So it doesn't like alienate people who doesn't understand that there could be different dice in the world. So that was pretty good to just make simple mechanics that work, and then we could actually more concentrate on the narrative side of the game. So it was more like the story actually built the game, also the and it was more like stronger in the whole game system as well. But I'm not sure it's what is the name for Dungeon World was the play game we started to play. But I think it has a general.
Yeah, powered by the apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Powered by So that's I think that's been one of my favorite mechanics. And we played this Starhold game, and we used the same mechanics to that. And that was like a space science fiction game. So the answer to your question, so I would go with the powered by the apocalypse game system.
Are you more for the mechanics or for the role-playing aspect of the hobby?
Definitely for the role-playing aspect of the hobby. Because when I was a kid and we played this Cyberpunk 2020, and my friend's big brother was our like game master, and he was very engineer about the technique, like the mechanics. Like I was just we could spend like 6 hours in one battle, were throwing die just to see like which nail of the finger the bullet hit, and it was kind of like that was too much for me even then, even though it was exciting, but it was just like, and he loved like all these tiny, tiny details of mechanics. So I think I had my share of mechanics back in the day, and now I've just been more enjoyed the role-playing aspects of these games.
Yeah. Are there any mechanics that you feel that's not for me? Is it when it gets too technical or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I can relate.
It depends. I mean, if it's very swift and smooth, why not? Yeah. But and everybody is understands how it works. But if it goes like too complicated and there's half of the players don't even understand what's going on, then it's not very fun.
Yeah, I can get that. Do you have a favorite IP, intellectual property, or something that if they put a name on it, like Buffy, Star Wars, or Batman, what's your favorite go-to genre?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm really open to different like worlds and genres in general. I've always liked the Cthulhu stuff, H.P. Mm. Lovecraft, like this cosmic horror kind of stuff. But I've never really got into a group of tabletop role-playing people who could do it as well. I think serious is the wrong adjective, but like who can make it feel like H.P. Lovecraft,
nah.
Make it feel like this horror, because I think many times when people are facing like this dark and uncomprehendable stuff, then people tend to, you know, like start making weird and funny stuff, you know, that doesn't really belong to that kind of game. So I would love to play, get like maybe four people group to play Cthulhu based like horror tabletop role-playing game sometimes. But well, yeah. I think it's very delicate. You have to need to have the people tuned in the same kind of a mode to take most out of it. So that would be my ideal to try something like that, like survival horror in H.P. Lovecraft kind of a way.
Yeah, I'm actually GMing my home group in Call of Cthulhu 7th edition from Chaosium. So we are
nice.
We're gonna start playing Holland Orient Express, one of the biggest campaigns.
Cool.
Yeah.
And now we're playing the Warhammer fantasy.
Mm. Enemy Within.
Yeah, Enemy Within. We're playing that. And I like the dirtiness and the quirkiness of that world.
Mm.
It's a good balance, like different fantasy world than Dungeons and Dragons. So that's the campaign we're playing with my like our base group that I've been playing for now 6 years.
Yeah.
So that's something. It's fun. I've never been to Warhammer that much. I have a Hero Quest and Space Crusade, but I never went to the figures and the whole strategic war
miniature
thing.
Game.
Yeah, miniature games. But I like the world is pretty crazy, and it's very sarcastic and the parody of different nations and everything, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. But I can see what you mean about being in the right mindset of playing Call of Cthulhu, because or Cthulhu-esque games. One of my dear friends, Julia, she only been playing Dungeons and Dragons. We played Shadow of the Dragon Queen campaign together, and I asked the group, can I GM Call of Cthulhu? Yeah, she asked, what's that? It's cosmic horror. We can absolutely have fun and games with the we're friends playing a game. Of course, we can joke around, but sometimes we're going to get serious because it's cosmic horror. It's horror. I'm going to try to frighten you. I'm trying to build up suspense, and we can't just jokingly set aside because we don't understand. And she tried now my in the Horror Round Orient Express. I'm not super satisfied with the introduction to the campaign, so I've written my own adventure for that. And she she played through that, and she was super excited because that's a completely different play style to D&D. Completely different. And mindset, not the rules. The rules are different, but that's one thing. But the theme is something completely different. So I understand what you mean. You should be in the mindset playing that.
It also challenges the game master a lot in that sense, because that is the person who has to kind of also to make it feel like that, and also to tell the players to concentrate and try not to turn everything into some like crazy slapstick or whatever. That's what actually happened to our group and this group. We started to play Warhammer fantasy role playing, and that works well. I mean, you can be very gonzo in that world. I'm a badger rider. I'm a like a halfling, and I'm riding a badger. I just it's like a warrior. I have a saddle, and it's very furious. It's called a turnips. My badger, and I'm trying to build a bachelor rider halfling army, and I hate people. I hate human. So I'm very, 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 very angry, elderly halfling lady who is riding a bachelor and wearing an armor.
That's super. Yeah. Are you a GM or?
I'm a player in that game. I'm only GMing this Legendoja and Lohikäärme that is L&L.
Yeah, but what do you prefer, being a GM or a player?
I just started to be a GM first time in my life with this.
Oh,
I just started. I've been playing as a player from the 90s on, but I never really wanted to touch and do the GM stuff. It's for me, it's been kind of like a, I don't know, hot potato that I don't want to touch yet. But now I had a couple of friends who said that, can you introduce us to tabletop role playing game? And I thought that, okay, these are all beginners and newbies, and I will be a beginner now as a GM, and I started to GM just like this year. So because in that role playing concept that we're doing, the Rope Live, that we will be introducing to Sweden also in Gothcon, I'm like the host, and I'm one of the players. So if you've seen the Harmony Quest, so I am, you know, Harmony Harmon Quest, it's like the guy from the other guy from Rick and Morty, the animation, Dan Harmon. He has a own show, like a Critical Role type of a show, but in front of a live audience in a studio. And he's the host, and he's one of the players, and he's like whatever is happening in the fantasy world when they're playing, he's doing like it's everything he has illustrated as a cartoon. And he has own GM who was doing the game master, dungeon master stuff, and then he has like four or five other players, but he's playing himself, and he's the host of the show at the same time. So that's me in this show.
Yes,
I'm a player, and I'm the host. So there you have it. But we can talk about the concept later. But just to let you know, it's like I'm not the GM in that concept. No.
But how do you like being a GM for your friends?
Yeah, So far, I think I prepare too much because I don't I don't know them that well. They are like, they are just friends that I've meet, like friend of friends, and people who I've meet in the punk rock scene in Finland. They are also, some of them also play in bands and stuff like that. And they just, we were having like a midsummer party a couple of years ago, and they came over and they just started to talk about, because I was talking about the concept that I will have, this Ropelive, that I will introduce a role-playing game in the public broadcasting of Finland. And then they also said that we would love to start playing, but they don't know any GMs, and then, you know, my head started to spin, and then I actually I just asked them that, okay, let's do it, and they were like, yeah, okay. And and now it's, you know, with people in our age, things don't happen like let's do it next week. So it's like more like it took a couple of months to happen, or actually 2 years in as whole. But yeah, to answer your question, I like it, but I think I should do less and kind of like improvise more in that sense. I do improvise, but still I think I built the world and the situations way too much, because usually, as you know, the players can just pass something that you've been building up for half a day, just like, ah, fuck it, we do something else. So,
or fuck it up really, really, really good and surprising you. Yeah, you can do that, of course you can. Shit, 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 shit.
Yeah.
I do some prepping as well. It's been toned down the more I GM, but I'm worthless at names, so I always have a list of names right beside me. But what's his name? One second. This is his name. But I understand. What's your favorite game-related memory? It doesn't have to be a tabletop, it could be a computer game, but when you found out gaming is for me, this is where I belong, or some part of me belongs.
Yeah, well, I think it was for me when I was living up north in Lapland, also something that I could escape to, like just, I've started to play with the, I don't know, like 4 or 5 year old. We had like our first personal computer at home, and my brothers were playing some games on like old Spectra video, SVI328, I think was the model name back in the day, and I think that was something I remember. There was a Finnish like a computer magazine, and it was, everything was programmed in basic programming language, and I remember like copying and pasting like with my hands, and okay, and with my brothers to get like some, you know, like DIY like homebrew ski jumping game.
Oh,
and we could spend like I don't know, like hours just to trying to get all the letters and everything right, and then just like you press enter or whatever, and then hope that the game kind of, you know, turns on. So that's something I remember. Of course, it had the tape, cassette tape, well, if we bought a game, then it was on a, like a C cassette. But I remember that it was just, there was like so many different symbols, and if you had like just one mistake, you lack one, like I don't know, some like exclamation mark or whatever, then the game didn't work, so you had to really do it carefully. But it was very rewarding when the game just then turned on. They were very, as you could think, like in the 80s, they were very basic and stuff, but it was, I think that's one of my favorite like first kind of like memories, and I knew that from that on, I knew that I love video games, and I've been like collecting and playing and selling and collecting with way more money when I'm older, the same games that I sold when I was a teenager or whatever. But yeah, I've been big like Nintendo. I had all these. I ordered Super Famicom from Japan 1.5 years before it was released in as a Super Nintendo in Scandinavia. So me and my friend, we almost finished Link to the Past in Japanese. So it was.
Game.
Yeah, it's a great game, but we didn't understand a shit about the story because everything was in Japanese. Yeah, so we kind of, yeah, and that was like from, you know, trial and error. You just had to, you know, try everything, but we almost finished it. So that's something that I'm quite proud. But I think that was also one of my like first connections to. Well, more or less a little bit of role-playing game, but you know, this kind of stuff. And I remember I was in Haaparanda. There were a couple of really good game stores back in the day, and in Sweden you there was a much better distribution for NES Nintendo games and also records. We don't have to talk about records, but there was a good record store as well. But I remember buying this Shadowgate role-playing game for NES, and I was super excited. And then I got it and I put it in the machine. It was all in Swedish.
Oh,
they translate that game in Swedish, and I didn't have a clue. I thought it was okay. Everything was written in Swedish in the box in the cartridge. But I thought that the game has to be in English.
Oh, yes.
But it wasn't. And, well, I had to return it. And that was a good enough reason that I don't understand anything. But now I have it in English, and I actually played it through a couple of years ago. But still, that was something related to Sweden. But that was fucking cool that you had a NES game in your mother tongue.
Yeah,
like international game, not like some, I don't know, like, well, anyway, a big game back in the day.
Did you play Diablo?
No, I didn't.
But you ever heard of Blizzard's Diablo?
Yes,
they actually
yes.
translated that to Swedish as well. So there are a game where stay a while and listen, where a Swede actually say it.
Yeah.
So I grew up with both the English and the Swedish version. So
which one you preferred?
I love the English version because stay a while and listen is still iconic for me as well. Oh, okay.
Cool.
I'm just gonna sit down with the within this campfire. But yeah. And I think that's quite interesting about Sweden as well, or when someone has the balls to do that, because that's an international game.
but there's you have a much bigger like language in general. I mean, there's more people talking Swedish than Finnish, so it makes sense there is market for that. So I would think that's one of the reasons. But talking about Diablo and this isometric games, for me, Baldur's Gate and Fallout. Fallout is super super important. So those games were something that I was really deep into. The strategy games like Civilization and Dune 2 were something when I was a kid were huge, and also these adventure games of LucasArts and Sierra. But then when the first Fallout came, I was like, okay, I love Mad Max, I love post-apocalyptic stuff, this is awesome. And I think the when they went 3D, I think they did a really really good job. I always liked the idea that you can stop the action, VATS. Because I had a friend who was really into Diablo, and for me it like looked something that was super interesting, but I wasn't really into the fact that you had to point and click real fast. You had to kind of like it was like a real-time battle kind of thing. So So I always preferred the strategy of games that you can like pause it for a while or slow it down a lot and then kind of think and like, okay, I will shoot that monster in the head and I try to cripple that or whatever, you know, this kind of stuff. Yeah.
You're the one of the person behind Rope Alive, or how did you pronounce it?
Yeah, Rope Live. Rope Live. It's internationally, it sounds like rope. Why are you using a rope? But Rope is actually a nick for role playing games in Finland because roll, R O, and then peli, spel, peli in Finnish. So it's R O, roli, P E, P E, peli. So it's Rope. It's a common, if people are talking about like about Rope something, then you know it's a slang word for role playing, basically. So it's RPG Live, roughly translated to English.
Yeah, but where did that? First of all, what's Rope Live?
Well, it's a program that we're introducing homebrew tabletop role-playing games, like one-shot games that start, we introduce the whole world and we finish the whole adventure within 5 or 6 hours. Depends on the game. We've done it 6 episodes now and they're all independent homebrew games that the changing game masters write and also played with us or game master it with the audience. And it's interactive in that sense that we have a very, very lively chat. There's thousands of people participating and we give them it's like everything is happening like interactive and in real time, like we're giving them like votes to vote about what will happen kind of next, or there's like different alternatives and which alternative will get the most votes. That's something that we will present in the game, like the next step of the game will be something that the audience has voted, like let's say that our group is being like knocked down and unconscious, and then the audience will decide where the group is going to like wake up. Is it going to be a cell? Are they're in a bottom of a like some huge pit or I don't know, wherever. There's like more alternatives, and then the game master will take the vote check what is the vote and then start to build the story from that on. And usually my character has been like a avatar character in that sense that I will while I'm playing, I'm checking the chat all the time, and people from the chat can just give me a certain kind of like suggestions that what my character should do in different situations. And I'm taking like from the audience suggestions. I will like take one or two or whatever. Whatever is the kind of like the consensus in the chat, and I will use that when I do decisions with my character. So those are like the two basic like interactive or interaction parts in that game. So everything is happening right there. It's live, and people the audience and the crowd can participate sometimes pretty heavily also in what will happen. So that's basically the idea. But of course, the benchmark is, like I already said, Harmon Quest is one of those. And then, well, Critical Role basically also was something that I thought that, okay, this could be done in Finnish. And we could also introduce a lot of people who are interested in tabletop role-playing games, but they've never tried it. They maybe don't really understand it, or something that they haven't really had the guts to, you know, start playing. So this, take the leap for that. So that's something that we want to introduce. And most of the players that we invite to play with us are more or less like celebrities, like known people from the, like, some other branches of the Finnish life, but they have some kind of background in role-playing games.
Oh.
So that's also something to introduce, like, okay, we have this, let's say, this very famous, like this astronomer person, or this very famous journalist, or this very famous rapper, and they are like participating in the game and talking about their like role-playing history, like back in the day we used to play, or maybe some of them are being like active role-playing gamers, like from since 20 years or something like that. But people really don't know it, but they have also a forum to tell, like, okay, I've actually done it. It's really cool. And I love playing role-playing games. And then they can see how they play with their characters and stuff. So it is something that is, we try to like make it more popular RPG concept. But we also want to offer something to people who are already familiar with role playing. Yeah. And we actually got the Finnish GothCon is called Ropecon.
It's
annual usually in Helsinki. And I think it's one of the biggest in the Nordic countries. At least it's the biggest non-commercial role playing con in Nordic countries, and they gave us an award for Ropelive. I always thought that, okay, maybe the hardcore role-playing people are not very interested of this, because this is like trying to popularize. Maybe it's too simple or stupid or whatever for them, but actually it's very well received in the Finnish role-playing community. And one of the reasons is that game masters are famous in that community. They are like very experienced game masters, and also the ones who are playing are like pretty known in the like the small circle of role-playing enthusiastic. So that's something that I'm really happy about, that it's well received. So, and that was one of the reasons that's why we want to introduce our upcoming project with SVT, with the Swedish broadcasting company, in GothCon, just to let you as somebody who is really into role playing game to introduce it, and also to hear like what you have to say about it, what are the suggestions that you will give us, and what would be really cool to see or hear in that program. So we want to have a good kind of a relation and like a dialogue with the Swedish role-playing community as well. And that's why I'm really, really excited to come to Gothenburg and meet people there as well.
Yeah, because this, you said one of the inspiration was Critical Role. That's a YouTube channel, but this really sticks out, not just because you do it in Finnish, but it's with the public broadcasting a company. Yle.
Yle. Yle.
So when you're playing, when you're doing these sessions, they are about 6 hours long.
Yeah.
Is that broadcasting on TV, or is that on the Finnish platform? Like we have SVT Play, so we can
That. It's a stream. It's a stream on YLE Arena.
Yeah,
it's a stream. Yeah. But the first one, let me think. What's the no? It's been a stream from the beginning on. Yeah. But the first one we did, it was in a big studio with like crane cameras and everything. It was like, it was pretty cool, but it was also something that we had like three camera programmers or use like professional camera persons behind it, and I think it was pretty expensive as well. I've had the idea for many years that, because when I started to play D&D, the fifth edition, and we had a good group of people and really funny and outgoing game master, I thought that, okay, this could be something, because there was so much funny drama and it was pretty well written. I think we went to the Underdark. That was the campaign with the demons. What was it called?
Doom of Annihilation.
Abyss. Yeah. And I thought that, okay, this is very interesting. Like the whole concept of the world and everything. And I thought that many times that I wish I had a microphone rigged somewhere, and I could just edit something that people could hear, like what kind of drama and what kind of like funny incidents are happening during the game. And I introduced it a couple of times to my bosses in a radio station that is no longer there anymore, but I was working in a different channel than now. And then all of a sudden it didn't receive too much of like anything. They were like, okay, sounds funny, but I don't know if we can do it, whatever. And then when YLE turned 90 years old, it was the anniversary, 90th anniversary of the company, then our channel wanted to do something different, not to look back, but, you know, present something that has never done before in the radio. And then they said that if they let me realize the idea that I had. And then I thought that, okay, this will happen. It will be a live broadcast radio show, and there will be like this interaction and everything. And then all of a sudden the arena, the Finnish version of Play, those people jump in and they said like, okay, we want to try to do this with cameras and with picture. It was originally like a radio show that I thought, because I never thought that we could ask any camera or like directors or whatever to do it, or a studio, big studio like that. So that was one of the reasons. It was like an anniversary one shot thing. But the funny and the good thing was that it was very, very, we were blown away how popular it was. It was during the Corona times. So people didn't have shit to do on a Friday. And I was very, very happily surprised that we had like 230,000 starts.
Woo! that's not a small number.
No. I was like, everybody was like, what the fuck? Okay, because I thought that maybe if I could get like 2,300 people or starts in the, and altogether that was maybe 20,000, 23,000 individuals were watching the 5-hour game. And that was something that was very, well, after that, like the people, most of the people didn't understand the shit that what we were doing. But when the bosses who are always looking at the figures, like, like how popular, how many people are we engaging with this, then it was easier to pitch that, okay, let's do another one. And the next one was, it was a fantasy, homebrew fantasy, a bit like D&D. There was like a colonization kind of a theme in it. It was like a fantasy somewhere, like, I don't know. It was like a fantasy game, but maybe like the 17th century Europe and US, kind of this kind of a colonization thing was the idea. And the second game, they wanted to have it in 2 months. And then I had to ask my game master, okay, can you continue and just write a sequel for the, you know, the previous game? And that happened, and that was pretty all right. We had to do it in a smaller studio, but we did it anyway. And then after that, I had to fight a lot to get my program going on because of the channel that I was doing it. They banished the whole thing. That channel doesn't exist anymore. So I had to find a new home for this concept. And then came the official name Rope Live. I found a producer. I found somebody from the company to give us a budget. And then we started to make it like not anymore to the radio. It was also radio live and stream live at the same time. That was the beginning of the thing. But now we thought that, okay, let's do the stream. And then we started to focus more on the different stories and different players, different ways of playing and different themes and everything. And we did two one shots a year, like one in the spring and one in the like late autumn. And that has been the cycle now. And this year, my colleague Justus is doing, he's been 30 years a DM or game master. So he's doing a Cthulhu podcast. He's doing a podcast and it's every Sunday there's a new episode. I think it's going to be 10 episodes. So that's not, it's not, it's pre-recorded. It's like a more traditional, actual play podcast. And there's, well, as you can understand, there's not that much of interaction with the public. But the upcoming, this autumn will be the one that it's going to be with SVT. And that's going to be the like the traditional Rope Live stream for your app. What is it called again?
SVT Play.
Play, yeah. So we have Arena. YLE Arena is our equivalent. But it's going to be in the SVT Play, and it's going to be like a studio stream and live thing then.
Yeah. But how... I have done some actual play in the podcast as well.
Cool.
And I think it's a really good way to introduce people to the hobby as well, because we can all... I think many people think it's just Dungeons & Dragons, and that's okay, because Dungeons & Dragons is pretty huge. I understand that. Because I did my homage... My magnus opus was Gotham's Rescue. I'm a huge Batman fan. I fucking love Batman. That's if I ever get a kid, a son, he's gonna be named Jason after Jason Todd. That's how it's about. One of my dear friends in the podcast and dear friend of my Amanda, she wanted to play. That's actually how we met. She wanted to play a tabletop RPG with me. Because I asked her, and she said, "So, what do you want to play?" She said, "Give me some examples." And one of them was superheroes. And she said, "Superheroes, but I'm a DC guy, DC Comics.
Yeah,
I want misery in my adventures. It's gonna be dark. It's gonna be, I mean, tough choices all through the way." Yeah. And she said, "Yeah, okay, that's cool," and. What I've noticed is I've done it for myself. So this is my production. I want to listen to this. So I learned a lot from Amanda. I have cried so many times in that pod that it's
nice.
Yeah. And she has well, I mean, our dear friend Heidi as well joined us. But that's a complicated subject for me, because it involved death, harming of children. Heavy subjects. I'm never going to be comfortable doing that live. It's because I can't edit. I can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's the best part of the live broadcast, that what happens, it's actually happening right at that moment. And you cannot you cannot like you cannot write too much what will happen next, or yeah, as you said, you cannot edit anything, or you cannot really presume, or like, I mean, the unpredictable elements are the best ones. And in Ropelive we had a couple of tears shed as well, and yeah. And these characters or the players who actually could do it really naturally were the ones who had done a lot of live action role playing.
Ah.
So it was, I mean, we are tabletop role playing. Some of our players are might use some like voice acting or yeah. something like that, but it's not necessary. As you know, whoever feels comfortable or uncomfortable, they can decide for themselves. But we had like our Maria Pettersson, our like how do you say, like guest player who's on every of our shows, like yeah like a standard guest. She's really into live action role playing as well. So she can really, like, I don't know, like also relate to the different moods, and also kind of like turn her character real fast.
Yeah.
In the shape of what will happen. If there's something really sad or something moving or touching, you can see it from her face, which is yeah. which adds a lot to the whole thing. You can get a close-ups when she's actually crying in that. So those are really precious moments. I think those you shouldn't cut them off in even though if you are doing a podcast that you can edit stuff out, if there's real emotions, don't ever edit it. It's really engaging.
No.
Yeah, it's really yeah. engaging, and you can hear it even though you don't see it as a podcast, yeah. but you can hear it from the voice and everything. So that's really
yeah. I've kept all those things. But how do you choose a subject? Because as I said, I can do a Batman, my version of a bad world. Her character woke up in a Gotham where Batman was no more, so she had to save her Gotham, and all the crime went up again. All the crazy villains are there again, but she was inexperienced. She was only Hale Holland, where Bruce Wayne is Bruce Wayne, his peak man. I mean, he's prepared for Armageddon four times around. But when you're doing this as a public service kind of thing, how do you choose the subject? Can you go too dark? Not too dark, but do you have free range, or is there something criteria you have to meet?
We can use pretty much free range. Of course, as producing the show, we know, and as a player, I know where the main events of the story are going. I know the big like the ending or the boss fight or whatever we have in the end. I know where it will go, and we have the whole screen ride. We're doing it together with the GM. The GM knows how to write a story and a game, but we know how to make it as a TV show, you know.
Yeah.
So we have to like do a lot of cooperation there, and then we can also we can talk about certain issues if there's going to be, we're gonna hurt children or whatever, and then after that we will decide on like suggested or recommend age limit for the show. We've done not like kids under 16 should watch this with their parents or you know some adult or whatever, because we have had the autumn show is usually around Halloween. We have used that as we have like this haunted house. There was a it's called a Veritimantti, which means translates to blood diamond, And the diamond was made or found in Africa, and it was like a lot of like people who were digging it were living in like next to slavery conditions, and it was like one of the biggest diamonds people had found there, and there was a lot of people who died because of getting that diamond, and it ended up surprisingly in a Finnish mansion, and there was four crooks burglars who knew about it but it was like a empty mansion, there might be the diamond, and they decided, okay, let's go and try to steal it from there, and the players were the characters that those burglars, they were the villains, yeah, trying to get the, but it was surprisingly as well a haunted place. The diamond had kind of corrupted the old family who used to live there, and their like many bloodlines. It was kind of a cursed thing, and they had to face the tragic story of that family and how they kind of like killed each other one by one, and it was like that was the reason it was abandoned, the whole thing and stuff like that, and there was, it was like the burglars were a bit dumb, and it was like a lot of like sitcom, because they were not very professionals in their profession, but then there was these horror things as well, and one we had in the space called The Dark Side, Pimeä Puoli, and that was also like survival horror on a moon base in the future. Mm. And this kind of stuff. But as I said, they are all homegrown. Like we don't take like we don't take the Batman or Marvel, like X-Men or even like Dungeons and Dragons or anything that is like existing IP, we don't take it. We ask the game masters to create a world, and we're trying to write articles about the world, like, okay, in 1 month we're gonna have the next Ropelive. This is the world that we are going to get into, and we are introducing the characters and the whole world, and then people, some of the people who have the time and the, you know, the interest to study the game before the game starts, they understand a lot of things. But we have also made the game so simple and the world kind of understandable that we can also introduce it during the game. We have these like inserts about like the world, like, okay, in between there's like usually four acts where we play, and in between those acts we have a 10-minute pause that, you know, people can break. You know, go to the toilet or you know, like have something to eat or whatever, because this will go on from the 6 until the midnight. That's usually, we start at 6 o'clock in the evening and it ends in the at midnight, so we need those breaks, and during those breaks there are inserts about the world. So we're kind of introducing every time a new world, like we're going to do also next fall.
Yeah.
It's going to be something that is familiar for both the Swedes and the Finns. I can tell you that much. Yeah.
How many times have you done it now?
Six times. Yeah, now, like I said, the podcast, and the podcast is, it has now, it's the Cthulhu IP from H.P. Lovecraft, but you know, he it's open source.
Yeah, it's public domain.
He never like how do you say, he didn't
trademark it.
Exactly, there's no trademark, so that's cool, and it's something different again that we haven't done before.
From the start, and to now, have the audience grown or is it stable?
The first one was the biggest success because, like I said, I think it was because it was in the middle of the Corona times. It was the fall of 2021.
Yeah,
when we started. So, and I think that was something that there was a lot of people who were really interested to see something new happening. You know, it was something that, okay, this is something different, and I've always, like I said, I think there was a lot of people who had always wanted to be the fly on the you know, the
on ceiling, the wall
on the wall, watching, you know, geeks playing role-playing games, but they never had the, you know, the, I don't know, I mean, there's so many of prejudice, as you know, to,
yeah,
like back in the 90s or earlier, or even these days. Nowadays it's more normal, I think, but still it's normalized in many ways. But that was also our aim, to like, hey, if you haven't ever watched anyone play tabletop role playing, now you can do it, and you can even participate very easily by yourself. Just, you know, log in the chat and just, you know, do the votes, chat with the people, hang around, and then react on the play, on the game or whatever. So I think those were something that had never been introduced before. And that was like the biggest success. But after that, we had the sequel wasn't that popular. But then when we came with the third one, we came with the completely new game that was actually based in the 90s of Helsinki in the 90s, and it has had some like magical realism. There was basically a family who found out that they are half angels, and they were fighting real angels. The real angels wanted to kill the half angels, who were like half human and half angels, and there's a story in the, like, the Old Testament about this kind of, like, they were like the original angels were not the ones that we know as the good angels, you know. There were something more, they didn't give a shit about people kind of angels. So those were introduced there, and our game master was somebody who was pretty famous, and we had more famous like celebrities from Finland to play as the characters. So that went really well, and it has gradually, I think it has gone a little bit down, but it's still, we're engaging, like, I think last time was the record for people in the chat, and I think there was 6,000 average.
Oh,
in the chat, yeah. But I think, how do you say, like, the new, or the like the, this kind of like the, losing a bit words here, but like the, it, because we have done it 6 times already, so it's nothing that people already know the concept, and they also know if they are interested or not.
Yeah.
So it's nothing, it's not anything groundbreaking anymore for the Finnish audience there. So, and it's something that people don't really watch that much, like, afterwards. The whole thing is to sit down the same time as we are sitting down and doing the whole thing. And now I think people, well, it's not Corona times anymore, so that's why people have other stuff to do as well than that. But still, it is thousands of people in the chat rooms and way more watching it, so it's still going well. But the first one was something that was very surprisingly popular.
When now you're gonna go to GothCon,
yes,
gonna be next week.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to release this on Monday. So if you're listening to this, when this is being released, it's just a couple of days away. But when you're doing this kind of project, how Because usually when I start a new campaign with my group, even if we've been playing for 10 years, we always have a session zero. What are your expectations from the game? Especially if you play horror, what don't you don't like in games and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Do you have that? Do you have a session zero with the GMs and everything like that?
That's one of the most important things that we do before the main event. And also we have a test game for a test group that our game master will take the whole adventure to, like, usually somebody who are their friends or their like their own game groups. But the session zero happens in our radio studio. We take the players, and we also then they will be like they we have a couple of meetings with the Zoom meetings with the players, and they can affect on their characters, like how they look, what are their abilities. Of course we talk about that with our game master, but then they have their characters and everything ready, and we kind of in the session zero we usually play the prelude of the game, and then of course everyone can know the game basic rules and a little bit see the dynamics of their characters and also get to know other players and the game master and everything. Like the session zero, it usually takes like 4 hours, and we're recording that also, and we use clips from the session zero to our radio promotions, because we're having like rotating radio promotions like a couple of weeks before the main event, and then people can also hear these people are playing in and how they're playing their characters, like let's say like 10 to 30 seconds clips like edited from the session zero. And then when we are doing the main event, we are actually making a video of the session zero. Is one of our introduction video, like what happened in the session zero. We will make a animated video in the main game, the main event, and all those things that happen in the session zero when we actually play the, let's say, 3 to 4 hours there, are something that will be used in the main event. And that's usually where the session zero ends the main game in the stream will start from that. So that's something that we've used. But yeah, we do the session zero. We talk about these things, and it's also something that the players, they already know the rules, the mechanics.
Yeah.
We don't have to teach them. It's too short time. We can just go to right away to the game and to the adventure.
Yeah.
And the people who are the crowd who is following it, of course, we will tell them the basic rules and how this is played. But of course, they can see when we start playing, like how it will actually like happen in practice. But yeah, session zero is one of the most important things that we do before the game.
Yeah, I get that. But when they come with you with an idea, or you seek out the GMs and says, "Hi, do you want to do this?" and things like that, do you sometimes comes with request, or is it just whatever they want to do, with some caveats? As you said, it can't be in the Marvel universe because we don't own the rights for Marvel universe.
Yeah.
But besides that, do they have free range to do what they want?
Well, usually they come up with, we have like the last GM, I think he came up with 8 different ideas of game. So okay. Miska is one of the most renowned Finnish RPG like game masters and game developers, and he has this Miskas maps. He's actually, that's what his main profession is, to draw maps for different campaigns. Oh. And he's selling them in the online, but he had like 8 different ideas, and he said that any of these ideas will be good for us. And then me and our producers and my colleague, we just picked like either this or that. And then Miska said, okay, I think this could work better for me. And then we started to build it from there. We build it together, but the GM is the main screenwriter.
Yeah.
So as I said, like they know how to write a game, but we know how to make it a stream, a show. So there's a lot, you know, you have to railroad a bit, of course, because every act has to stop at some certain strategic or dramatic point, so we can, you know, continue. And of course we have to finish it in 6 hours. We don't have it like, okay, 8 hours, you know, it's just, it has to be the 6 hours or whatever. But we basically choose and talk with the GM about the adventure and the game, what they want to realize, what they want to do, what do we have in our minds, and then we just start to bounce ideas, and it's always been pretty smooth. We haven't had the situation to force any GM to not to do something or to do something, you know, like against their will. So I think all our GMs that we have cooperated with, I think they're very, very flexible and also very creative. So it's been a pleasure to, I think many of those GMs are really enthusiastic about the project, that they want to, you know, be part of it, kind of a thing. And I think it's, for many of them, it's a good thing that they get to create the whole universe for the game. Nobody has offered like, hey, could we do D&D or cyberpunk or something that is, of course, there. Let's do it a little bit like this. Like the first ones were a bit like to fantasy, this Tolkien ish stuff, but you know, it's still, and we wanted to do the first ones from that point of view, because I thought that many people understand the Tolkien fantasy, base.
Yeah, it's an easier step in.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's something, like I said, it's like trying to introduce people more to the RPG hobby and the, you know, the just to try out, and hopefully we have got some people into role-playing games during the project.
You're now working alongside the Swedish public service. So you're now on Friday, next Friday when we're recording this, but if you see this on Monday, so it's going to be on this Friday. So you want to meet and greet people, the RPG community in Sweden, and GothCon is a great place to do that. I'm going to be myself there. I'm going to play some both board games and tabletop RPGs.
Nice. Are you DMing there?
On Saturday, and homebrew, One Night in Gotham, it's called. It's called The Slaughterhouse. The main goal of the game is to kill all the players. So it's a recurring theme now, where it's different themes every year and a different GM. So Swedish podcaster comes together, and they know it's going to be an uphill. It's last person standing.
Okay.
So
Battle Royale.
Yeah, precisely. And mine's, of course, is going to be in Gotham. because, as I said, I'm a huge Batman fan. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to pop by and say hi to you as well.
Nice. Yes.
But
and And Friday we're gonna have 7:30 to 8:30 is our presentation, and I think on Saturday we're gonna do another one, a rerun for that as well. I think so, and maybe also the podcast. But we're gonna have a stand, and we will hand out flyers that will have a task for all of you to fill in and give us let's just say like your experience. I'm not telling too much, but we will use your experience about certain place and surroundings, and we will use those experience that you will write us in our screenwriting. So some of your real experience in a certain place that will be revealed on Friday will be used as our fuel for our screenwriting. So there is a good chance that something that you have experienced is going to be written in the game and in the story.
Oh, super
cool. So that we're trying to engage people to help us in that sense, to a little bit of the screenwriting, or engaging the crowd to that it's going to be, even the screenwriting is going to be more like crowded, and not, well, crowded is the wrong word, but like that we could make it together with the audience and the crowd. So that would be really cool.
Yeah. So you're going to be there, or you're going to be there both on Friday and Saturday?
Yeah. No, I guess Sunday, I don't know. I think Friday and Saturday are the main days.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Yeah. Me and the game master of the upcoming game will be there, and we will do the presentation along with Johan from SVT. So we're gonna be there, and it would be awesome to talk more with the audience and the role playing community in GothCon.
Yeah. Are you gonna try to play something when you're there, or is it just work?
I think I'm there for work, but I think if there's time and a chance, I'm going to do. I think we have to make some shifts by the stand, because it's only three of us. So I think and our game master was actually last year in GothCon, so she knows people there, and I think she wants to also meet up with some people there. But at some point, I would love to try out some board games or tabletop role playing games if they are in English.
Yeah, no, we will translate it into English if necessary. Yeah. So don't worry about that.
My Swedish is inte så bra.
No problem. My Finnish is non-existent.
Yeah,
sad to say. Sad to say. But you're gonna be there on Friday. Are you gonna there? There's an event usually on Skärtorsdagen, the Thursday before. It's called GothCon Pub, where people arrive half day early, but you join up at a local pub, and all nerdiness is it's amazing because all nerds are there. Are you gonna join on Friday, or are you gonna be in Gothenburg on Thursday as well?
We will be on Friday. We will come by train from Stockholm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're actually taking the ferry to Stockholm and then taking the train from Stockholm to Göteborg.
Ah, okay, okay.
So it will take us some time to arrive there, but we'll be there on Friday and then leaving on Sunday.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to miss that, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Get together.
It really is awesome. It's a really fine tradition, because it's one of the things I really love about the gaming convention is I can meet all my friends there. We live all across Sweden.
And,
so it's super wonderful. It's a weekend with my friends. I already told my girlfriend, I'm going to be non-communicated with you during that weekend, because I'm so invested with my friends. And she said, I understand. I have friends that live in Gothenburg, but also friends from Stockholm who's coming over. So it's going to be amazing. So I hope you have a great time there. I would love to say hi to you. I would love to play a game with you as well. If you were up to it.
Yes.
My last question for tonight, because you need to go work tomorrow and I'm super tired as well.
Yeah.
I've been working 42 hours.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost 11:30 here in Finland.
Yeah.
In the night.
Why are our hobbies so freaking awesome?
What is?
Why are our hobbies so freaking awesome?
Tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah.
You mean? I think it's awesome because it's so engaging and interesting and giving in so many levels. I think it's just something that you don't get to experience in any other type of gaming. Like, because this is a cliche, but it's like the theater of mind and everything is just something that I think I've never thought about any other games and what has happened in games as much as I've like laughed and cried and did so many emotions during the doing tabletop role playing games. I never done live action role playing. I think the immersion might be even bigger, but I think I'm not the person yet to try that out that much. But I think it's just something that you can find different levels in good and bad from your friends when you're sitting around a table and just living and playing through some other character. So I think I've also engaged deeper with my friends as just in socially as well when I've played those games, because many times games can be not anti-social but not so social when you're just playing. So I think with tabletop role-playing game the storytelling and the narrative part and the engaging part of that is something that is doesn't really exist that much in other games, just in tabletop role-playing game. So that's my answer to you and for everyone else why this thing is so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I tell people, you as a GM, you learn problem solving as its finest. I do this instead. Oh crap. Yeah, of course there's a door. Of course. And you learn how to perceive other people's idea, because if you go into a role, even as a GM, but especially as a player, because you can invest so much time in a character, you can play yourself. I have no problem if you wanna. But I try to play something, always some small difference between me and the character I play.
Yes.
And I remembered many years ago, I learned a valuable lesson of not playing fair as well, because we were playing a Gotham yet again, and I played the villain, and I remembered, it's so clear in my head to this day, when they tried to corner her in, and said, haha, you can't outrun us. So he took out a grenade and said, that doesn't work on me. I'm super fast. You are, not your friend behind you. So he just threw the grenade and remembered. He said, that's not fair. He's a villain. He ain't going to play fair, man. And it was just an eye-opening for me as a GM. He's evil. He doesn't give a shit about you.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not going to play fair. And that's what this hobby can give you, a really eye-opening in different ideas or emotions, happy, sad, anger as well.
Yeah, that too, and frustration as well.
Yes. Not usually.
But I think the time you invested, it gives you so much back. Even though some people people are like, what, you're sitting around for like 7 hours? Not for me. But I think it is something that will give you in different ways, like triple the amount of time that you have invested back in different ways. So it's never like, I rarely feel like, okay, I've just like, just spent my, you know, wasted my time sitting here. Then it's the wrong group of people. Then you have to change the group or something. But still, I never got bored of this at any phase. And it's fucking awesome to do something like this as a profession, something that if you could do something that you love, make it out of something that you can work or get even paid for, it's pretty freaking awesome. And I think nowadays the role playing thing has become in that stage. I think there's a lot of people who are playing, and there's a good tradition for people and who have been playing for a long time. So I think it's evolving in so many different levels that I would, you know, it's interesting to see what kind of stuff will come out now that people are more into role playing games, thanks to, you know, big TV series and other popular culture that has like promoted during the last years. So that's also one of the reasons that we could realize this Rope Live was because of people had seen it happening in Stranger Things or something like that. It has like given the boost. Okay, what is that? Okay, I remember that from somewhere. What are they doing? I want to see, I want to do that as well. So I hope that it will just get bigger and bigger all the time.
I hope so as well. Thank you so much for joining us at Mindy.
Thank you, Mikael.
I hope to see you next weekend.
Yeah.
And as I said, maybe even getting in a game in or two.
Yeah. I will see when you have the schedule, when you're working on it, we can agree. I can love to sit in the same table, and I never played the DC world as a RPG, so, but I have a bunch of old comics from the, because I'm a big fan of the Killing Joke and these classic comics. So Alan Moore is one of my favorite comic writers. So that's going to be interesting. Looking forward to.
Yeah. And we hope many people engage with you as well as GothCon.
Come talk to us. We don't bite. We just talk English and bad svenska.
I think that's going to be awesome as well. Yeah. Thanks again, my friend.
Thank you. All the best. See you in GothCon.
Yeah, the same to you.